Can't remember exactly what I wrote, but yeah, essentially, sort of wondering career wise, I'm in my early 30s, and sort of struggling to get going. And yeah, I graduated from uni a couple of years ago, and I haven't been able to find work in my field. And yeah, I guess also with the rise of LLMs, sort of wondering how best to adapt to that, and sort of how to break into my field, or even if that's the right option for me. I've sort of thought about doing postgraduate, but I also have a bit of skepticism towards further tertiary education. I know your sort of views on that as well. So, possibly that's the only way to get into it, but I guess I'm sort of a little bit stuck applying for jobs, and yeah, the economy is not so great right now. So, if you have any sort of thoughts on that, or how you could maybe talk me through how to think about this in a better way, so I'm not just sort of stuck, that would be really great.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously not much of a guidance counselor, but I'll do what I can philosophically speaking. And you're white, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just about everywhere you go, the odds are stacked against you because most of the new jobs are going to non-whites, non-males in particular. So, yeah, I mean, I have great sympathy for that. And I was just starting to see the beginning of that when I was in the business world, and it's a very tough situation. And of course, quite unremarked upon by the mainstream media, which seems to have a fetish for white men not getting jobs. So I really sympathize with you as far as that goes. Now, tell me a little bit about your life, though. I mean, to graduate with an undergrad degree with in your early 30s, I feel that there's a few steps that have been skipped in the story of your life.
I guess we could start at high school, because I was sort of finished high school, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I went to uni for one semester, and was going to do major in psychology, but yeah, I sort of didn't really have any plan, and ended up dropping out of that. And yeah, I've tried a bunch of different things. Like, I did an electrician pre-trade course, but I sort of thought, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of good in some ways, but it didn't seem like it was using my potential. I think I want to do something a little bit more intellectual, but yeah. And then I basically decided I wanted to go do travel a bit, and do English teaching as a career. So yeah, it
Oh
was
no. Oh no.
yeah well
The great black hole of the 20s swallowed you up.
well I wasn't doing it for that long, but
Okay, how long
yeah,
did you do
it's
the overseas teaching for?
I mean, I was planning to do it for a bit longer, but I it was only about 8 months or something.
Oh, okay.
And
Sorry about that. Go ahead. Sorry, I may have overreacted slightly. It's possible. It happens.
I mean, my uncle had done that, so I sort of thought, oh, it seems kind of cool, the places he's gone to. But yeah, basically, yeah, that didn't go so well, and I ended up running out of money because they just weren't able to give me enough hours.
What was the, when you say it didn't go well, it's just because you couldn't get the hours or some other reason?
Essentially that. Like, I did like a 1 month certificate in it, and I thought that, that plus being a native speaker, there aren't that many in South America. So I thought, okay, that could, it might not be big money, but it should be enough to pay my way. But yeah, I struggled to find something. I found something that basically, yeah, sort of lied to me about, well, gave me a contract saying this is the minimum we're going to give you, but didn't give me that, and just said that there weren't enough hours. So And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of hard to navigate the legal system in my own country, let alone in another one.
Contract was a scam, but you didn't have any real legal recourse because of foreign country and all.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. All right, so you did that, and how old were you when you were doing that?
I was 23, 24.
Okay, so hang on, I'm still... Oh, you because you did the electrician before that, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so high school, you did a little bit of psychology, dropped out of that, did some electrician, left that, went to teach in South America for 8 months, left that, 23, 24, and then what?
Well, I came back and thought, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I sort of thought, maybe I'd try the electrician thing again, sort of trying to just get some sort of work experience with that. It was actually quite difficult. I mean, I guess a lot of people would say there's so much work in the trades, but it's a bit more nuanced than that. I think there's boom and bust cycles in construction, and certainly if you're like entry level, you're not going to be first picked. So I did like a little bit of work experience, but couldn't find much. And I thought,
did you become an official electrician?
No. I was just like trying to, test it out, I guess. I don't know what that means.
I mean, don't you have to be an electrician? I'm not an expert in the trades, obviously. Don't you have to be an electrician to do that work? Or was it like under the table? How did you get to be? I mean, I can't just say, hey, I know a little bit about sinks, I'm going to go be a plumber. I'm just trying to understand it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't doing it independently. Like, I was sort of trying to see if I could shadow someone.
Apprenticing.
I mean, I didn't sort of start going, I didn't start the apprenticeship, but I was just like, can I get some work experience? And then they know me and then they go, okay, we'll give you an apprenticeship. That was sort of the plan.
Okay. All right. And how did you do that?
And I did like a little bit of it. It was probably 4 or 5 months before I decided, I don't actually want to do this. I want to go to uni, and I guess I'd always thought about going to uni. And
decided, right? Because you've been before.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how did you choose biotech?
Because I've been interested in health for probably since I was about 18. I think it's, one of the most important things we have. So I thought it's, a really sort of rewarding thing to work on. And I wanted to learn more about it at a fundamental level. So, I thought the only way to really get into it as a career would be to go to uni. I was a bit skeptical about tertiary education to, how well, the return on investment, but I thought, I think I'd regret not trying. That was my motivation.
Okay, and how old were you when you started the degree?
I was 24, I had to do like a prep course and then go into the degree, 24.
So, was it 4 years or 5 years or?
I changed my degree halfway through, so it took like 5.5 years.
Oh gosh, okay. Okay, so that takes you to 28 and you're 32. Sorry, how old are you again?
32.
32, so, okay. So for the last 3 or 4 years? I mean, I know it's pandemic and all, but I guess not so much. But what's been going on for the last couple of years?
So it would have taken me, I was just on my last audit 2 years ago. So it would have been about June 2024 that I finished.
Okay, got it. And did the job prospects change from when you started the degree to when you ended it? In other words, did you do research into the viability of the degree from an economic standpoint beforehand? Like, what are the odds of getting hired? What's the starting salary and so on? Did that change before or after? Or did you just kind of dive into the degree without figuring out how economically valuable it might be on the other end. I'm not critical. I'm just curious about your thought process.
I guess I did some sort of, small amount of research. Probably wasn't enough, but there's things like career websites online, and they would say prospects for jobs are, I don't know, moderate, I think I remember it saying. And I was, because I had some programming as part of the degree, when I changed to the second degree, there was programming as part of it. So I was sort of thinking that would be my fallback option. But then the IT market is not great right now either. So I guess like with the data science, that actually had pretty good prospects when I changed in 2021. And that's completely changed. Biotech, always a little bit difficult, but I think there were sort of moderate prospects, but now it's, I think, significantly worse. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should have been sort of looking at job listings.
Was it work study at all, or did you just go straight through the work? Sorry, did you go straight through the studying, or was it work study?
I mean, I did work, like unrelated work.
No. I mean, so some places, like you do a semester, then you do a semester where you work for a biotech company and you try and sort of get contacts and experience that way.
Yeah. No, they don't like have that as part of it. So
okay.
I did an internship that I just found myself. And that helped me get a job after graduating. Not straight away, but eventually I got it. But it wasn't really related to what I studied.
I'm not sure what that means. So you got a job in the field, but it wasn't related to what you studied?
I mean, personally, I guess it was a lot more basic than, like, they asked for a degree in the job description, but you didn't really need that. Like, it was pretty basic, I think.
All the jobs you get out of university are basic.
Yeah, but some of my friends have got jobs, you know, they might not be at the cutting edge, but learning a lot more, I think.
Oh, sorry. So you've got some friends from the degree who have got work.
Yeah. And, you know, other friends doing it who did other degrees that are doing work. And
So it's not that the job market is automatically bad because some of your friends have work in the biotech field, is that right?
I'm not talking about biotech. I'm like other sort of data
other
science.
Degrees.
Or,
okay, got it.
Yeah, things like that. I mean, my degree is actually, it was actually a data science degree with the sort of biotech major.
Sorry, I'm a little confused. So was the data science is the major or the minor or something else?
Data science is the degree, and then you can choose if you want to specialize in different areas, like, you know, if you wanted to do bio or like linguistics or population health, things like that. So you could specialize. So yeah, I guess I knew people who were doing those other specialties.
Okay, got it. And so you graduated 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And you had a job in the field that was kind of basic, and that was an internship. And what happened with that?
Well, the internship was before I graduated, the summer before. And yeah, so that was just like a 3-month internship. Did that. And then after, so 2025, I got a job back at that same company doing the fixed-term contract. So that just ended and, sort of looking for work since then.
Sorry, since when?
Since December 2025.
Okay, got it. And there was no possibility, obviously, or you didn't get an offer to continue with that place, right?
I think it was it a month or two before that finished, the CEO announced a restructuring of the whole company. And, you know, with jobs eliminated and teams shuffled. And so I, at that point, I was thinking this is, I mean, I was treating that job as a stepping stone, hopefully. But when that happened, I thought, oh, okay, that's makes it significantly tougher. I did apply for, for another role, another couple of roles at that company. But
I'm so sorry, I'm a little confused here. So the company restructured, did your job get eliminated?
No, it didn't. But
so you could have continued.
I was, no, because it was just fixed term. So
okay, so
just,
your job was going to end, and with the restructuring, you couldn't get another job. Is that right? In the company. So your job ended with the restructuring. You couldn't get another job.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, got it. Got it. All right. And how many hours a day are you spending looking for work?
How many hours a day? Probably about 3, if I'm honest. And then also working on some other projects on the side, because I've gotten some feedback that that's kind of the best way to increase my chances. Like if I have more stuff on GitHub or whatever, then, that's a good sign to employees. So a bit of both. But yeah.
Okay. And what's the best thing that I could do to help you other than be a guy who needs your services and could pay you a good salary? What can I do to best help you?
Good question. Feel like I'm blanking and we should have an answer prepared, but
I mean, I have some thoughts, but the important thing is that I do what's most helpful to you.
Yeah. I guess the first thing that comes to mind, because I'm seriously considering doing a master's degree, but I'm also, skeptical of the return on investment, the opportunity costs and the direct cost. And I don't know how much have they really adapted that degree towards, considering we have LLMs and I guess it's sort of changed the way we interact with the knowledge economy. So I guess that's my sort of first concern. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I know you say, you don't want to tell people what to do, but I guess just to get your opinion would be valuable.
Sure. I'm certainly there's no way that academics are going to keep up with LLMs.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs are barely able to do it. There's no way. I think there's no practical way that you could rewrite course materials to take into account LLMs. It's too fast of a moving field, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess the main draw card is less the coursework, but more of the research. And if I could, focus on that research and
you can do that as your own project. I mean, so look, I obviously can't tell you whether to take a graduate degree or not. I can tell you, I think, why it's tough for you to get work.
Okay.
Because you're kind of spiritless or lifeless.
Yeah, I mean,
no particular enthusiasm, no particular energy, no particular passion, no excitement. You're just kind of going through the conversation stuff, and it's a bit of an energy leech, right? And no disrespect, I'm sure it's a tough time in your life, but I assume you called me up because you want me to be blunt, and I would have a tough time hiring you because I like people who are enthusiastic. Because in the war between enthusiasm and depression, anybody who's enthusiastic doesn't want to get involved in that battle. We want other enthusiastic people around us who are excited and churned up and turned on and, all of that kind of stuff. Now, again, this is maybe a different situation. Maybe you're fantastically enthusiastic in other conversations. I can only judge you by your conversation with me. But you seem quite dispirited. I won't say depressed, because that's like a clinical term and I can't diagnose anyone. Not that I'm sure even that that's a diagnosis, it's just a description. But you seem kind of not excited about much.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
And you also seem oddly isolated.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, you have talked about your life journey without mentioning anyone else. Siblings, parents, aunts, uncles, girlfriends. No one. You are alone in your life story. Now, that doesn't... I'm just telling you what I've heard. I don't know what the true facts of the matter are, but it seems like you're having to make all these decisions on your own. Like, you haven't mentioned anyone who's given you, oh, well, my father said this, but it turned out he was wrong, and my uncle said this, and, you know, but that I got offered by this. My second cousin said he'd hire me on... Like, you seem, and again, I'm just going by what you said, it could be wrong, but you seem kind of isolated, if that makes sense.
Okay. I mean, I do have friends, and I have, talked to them about how they're going with finding roles and...
Okay, sorry. And I understand, because you already told me you have friends. I get that. But I'm talking about in your life journey. I mean, what's the status of things with your parents?
I guess in terms of them giving me advice, I think they've given me some sort of advice, but I guess, I don't know if it's super useful all of the time. I mean, my mum didn't go to uni, so she's sort of not sure how to help, I think.
No. In some ways. Sorry, I'm not talking about guidance counselor advice. Okay, let me ask you this. How driven, pepped up, or enthusiastic are your parents about life?
I don't think my mum would be that pepped up. Like, I guess maybe some parts, some things, but wouldn't say in general, like, she's super, super enthusiastic.
Okay, that's kind of an annoying answer. Do you know why?
Yeah. Because I didn't give specifics?
Well, no, because you said she's not, in all things, she's not super enthusiastic, which is a straw man, because I don't think I used the phrase super enthusiastic, because that could just be manic, right?
Yeah.
Okay, would you say that your mother is pepped up, excited, and thrilled about her life as a whole?
I've listened to a lot of calls, and then, I guess I'm the guy struggling to articulate and...
I would say...
Well, you're fogging, that's all.
I would say she's not. If I can give a yes or no answer, I'd say no.
Okay, and what about your father?
I think he is. Not like to the extreme end, but I'd say generally...
Okay, I understand it's not to the extreme end. We just went through this. My God, man.
Right.
You're really dedicated to the fog. I appreciate the dedication. I mean, he's not manic. Okay, I get that. Right, I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so your father is enthusiastic, your mom less so.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's a hard thing to sustain, right? Because people who are not enthusiastic tend to drag people's levels of enthusiasm down. I'm not saying that's always the case, but it's often the case, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not together, so.
Ah, well, there we go. Okay. And when did they split up?
That was when I was 8.
Ah, okay. Okay. And why did they split up?
My dad said that they, what did he say exactly? Well, he said, I guess they weren't compatible. I don't think he used that exact
Okay,
term,
but that's by definition, right?
Yeah.
So why did they break up?
I mean, he's...
Like, was there anything in particular that you know of that happened?
They didn't really tell me at the time, but I asked my dad about it years later, and I guess he essentially wasn't really marrying her for the right reasons. Like, it was more, this is the right time in my life to settle down, and he sort of just, I don't know, went along with it. Well, no, I don't know, went along with it, it's not the right word, but he sort of just... Yeah, I don't know. It didn't choose
okay, so
the
you
right
don't know.
Reason.
It's fine. You don't really know why they split up. It sounds like. I don't want you to make anything up, because if they haven't told you, then you don't know, right?
Well, I think that is actually what happened. Like, I don't think
I still don't know what happened. Like you said, he was the right time to settle down. Okay, how does that tell me why they broke up?
I'm
going to be just annoying. I apologize. I'm just going to be annoying in your face about this stuff. So go ahead.
Uh, yeah. Um, I don't think there was like a specific, like,
not a big reason,
proximal cause. Like, I think it was more that, and when I, you know, think about them, I don't think they are very similar, and yeah, I don't think they are really that compatible. So,
okay, hang on. I guess, so I get that. What incompatibilities were there?
Well, I guess like my dad, he's,
you know, if you go to the tailor and you say my pants don't fit, he's going to ask you what? In what way don't they fit, right?
Right.
Okay, so incompatible doesn't explain much.
Yeah, I think in one way, my dad, like he's, he went to uni, he's like, you know, a professional. My mum, like she didn't finish high school. So I think there's a bit of a mismatch in terms of maybe intelligence and
intellectual
curiosity. Yeah.
Okay, well, why can't you just say that? I mean, why do we need to spend 10 minutes thrashing around the bushes? Your dad's smart and your mom's not.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be impatient, but I'm going to be 60 this year, so I'm aware that I'm mortal, so I just like answers faster. And I mean, is this a surprise to you, or did you know that at the beginning, or?
Sorry, what's a surprise?
Well, if the answer is they were incompatible because your mother is not very smart and your father is smarter, and so maybe they couldn't have conversations, or they couldn't understand each other because there's a, I don't know, a standard deviation or more between them in IQ, is that the answer? Like, can I say, why did your parents split up? If you'd have said, well, my dad was smart and my mom not so much, we could have done that in 10 seconds as opposed to 10 minutes.
Yeah. But I guess I sort of wonder, like, why would they get together in the first place if that was...
Well, maybe he knocked her up?
No, I don't think so. I think it was...
Well, was your mother very attractive when she was younger?
I think above average.
Okay. And was your father attractive when he was younger?
I think he was above average, but he did, tell me, he did have some sort of insecurities with that, and probably, didn't have
the best. Okay, so hang on. So your father married down in terms of looks and intelligence?
I don't think he married down in terms of looks, but
I'm sorry, you're a math guy, right? So when you tell me that your mother was average, but your father was above average, then to me, syllogistically...
No, sorry, I said my mother was above average.
Oh, my apologies. Okay, sorry, I thought you said she was about average. Okay, so if you give me the 1 to 10 scale when they were younger, your mother and your father. Your mother was a what, your father was a what?
I would say they're both sevens, yeah.
Okay, so they're both sevens. So he married horizontally in terms of attractiveness, but down in terms of intelligence.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. And you don't know why they got married?
I think, I think my dad, maybe there was a bit of insecurity that he thought maybe he won't get another chance, or he won't, I don't know.
Well, how old were they when they met?
Details from him. They would have been 30.
Oh, they were both 30. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And they got divorced, I guess, before they hit 40, give or take?
Were they 40 or, about that time?
Well, you were 8, I think, right? 40. So it depends on when they had you and so on, right? And do you have siblings?
Yeah.
What do you have?
I have 2 younger sisters and then half brother, half sister.
And who's the half-brother, half-sister from, mom or dad?
From dad.
From dad. So he did remarry, and how did his second marriage do?
He's still married, and that was like 2010 they got married.
Okay. And did your mother get remarried?
No.
Okay. All right. And so would it have been better for your parents, for you to and your siblings, to have stayed together?
Yeah.
So why did they get divorced if there wasn't a big thing? Like, if one of them became an alcoholic or a drug addict or cheated or, then there's some big dramatic thing, right? So, I mean, if you can be together for over a decade, they were together obviously before they got married and so on, so maybe 12, 13 years or whatever. So if you can be together, shouldn't you just stay together for the sake of the kids? Yeah. So why did they get divorced if there wasn't a big thing and it's better for the kids and they were already together for 12 or 13 years beforehand? I'm still trying to understand why they got divorced.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't know if my dad would be 100% honest with me in the answer, but yeah, potentially it's could be he turns 40 or he's getting to 40 and he's thinking he wants to find someone that's more compatible. Maybe it's sort of an anxiety of getting older and he does that.
It could also be selfish It could also be that he just got more successful and wanted an upgrade. Because that's a big temptation for men, right, as we age. Because, you know, a man who's 30 usually has a lot less money than a man who's 40. And, you know, maybe he stayed in shape, maybe he kept his hair, maybe he made more money, and he's like, I mean, I settled too much. I settled below what I should have, or something like that.
Yeah, I think, that's probably somewhat accurate. I think, if I remember right, I think he did get a new job around that time. And I think, so maybe he was earning a bit more.
And it could also be that for a man to succeed in his job, he's usually judged by the wife that he has. And if your mother was not particularly high status in a more professional or business environment, in other words, if she didn't know exactly what to say or didn't have that kind of air or grace or class or something like that, which, you know, if she's not particularly smart, she probably wouldn't have, or decorum or, you know, all of that sort of stuff, then she would be a career-limiting partnership for him.
Right, right.
Okay, so your parents got divorced, and how long did the divorce take? Was it bitter, relatively okay? How did that go?
I don't actually know how long it took to, you know, get legally divorced or whatever, but I when I say I was 8 when they told me, so that I guess they would have got separated, and I don't know when it was legally done, but yeah, there wasn't any fighting or bitterness over that. They were I guess that's good that wasn't any worse. But
well, no, here's the thing though, it's tough either way, because if your parents are fighting like cats and dogs, that's more traumatic at the time, but it makes more sense as to why they're getting divorced. You know, I'm not saying these couples, you know, the sort of conscious uncoupling, but we still love each other, we're still best friends, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, why the fuck don't you stay married then? Right? So the more friendly or amicable the divorce is, the tougher it can be for the kid in the long run, because it's like, well, then if you like each other and you don't fight and you can divorce with relative peace and grace, like, why can't you just stay married?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I mean, my parents were fighting like cats and dogs. So I understand why. Yeah, but the people who are like, no, we're still best friends, we agree on everything, you know, we drifted apart or something. It's like, well, if you're still good friends and you can still get along and you still can co-parent, why the hell don't you just live together and be married? Anyway, and who did you end up with, 50-50 or?
Mainly with mom, but I think it was weekends with dad initially.
And did that drop down?
Yeah, at some point it did.
Roughly when? How old were you?
I'm trying to think if it was all through high school or not, but I think at some point it went every second weekend, maybe when I was like 13 or something, but very fuzzy on that.
Okay, and why do you think your father didn't fight for more time with you? I mean, if it was an amicable divorce, he could have gotten more time pretty easily, right?
I think he felt guilty, I think. And so
what?
Like
hang on. Hang on. What do you mean he felt guilty? If he felt guilty, shouldn't he want to spend more time with you? Not less?
Well, what I mean by that is, so yeah, when I was talking to him about why did he get married, why did he get divorced, he said he'd just give the house to mum. Like he didn't fight for it or anything like that. And I think that's kind of a sort of guilty thing, or like, because he was the one that wanted to leave, like not mum. So
I still don't understand what this has to do with. Sorry if I'm missing something. I still don't understand what this has to do with him seeing you much less.
Well, I think he just thought it was me that left, so, you know, mum can get the custody. Like, I'm not going to sort of fight her on that. I mean, I think we...
Wait, hang on. But then why would he cut the hours in half? You said from every weekend to every second weekend, so that's cutting. Why would he cut the hours in half years after the divorce? That, do you understand? That doesn't... I don't see how that follows. Did he become guilty a couple of years, like 4 years after the divorce, or...
I mean, we also saw him, I think, some other night during the week. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process was with that.
And did he ever ask you whether you wanted to see him more or less or about the same?
No, he didn't. He didn't ask me.
Don't you think that's important? Because he left your mom because there was something deficient about her. And if he left your mom because there was something deficient about her, and then he gave her almost complete custody over the children, wouldn't what was negative towards him also transfer to the children?
Yeah.
I mean, if he says, look, she's just not smart enough for me to have a relationship with, but she's totally fine to raise my kids. What? Doesn't make any sense. He made the choice. You didn't. He chose to have her as the mother of his children. You didn't choose her as a mother. If he finds her deficient and then he gives her almost complete custody of the kids, then that deficiency is inflicted on the kids, whatever that is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did your mother ever ask you whether you would like to see your father more?
No.
Okay, so nobody cared about your will or your choices. Sorry to be blunt, but that's the way it is as far as I could see it. So this is why you're kind of low energy, because your willpower didn't mean much as a kid.
Okay.
I mean, you didn't choose for them to get divorced. You didn't choose... whether you spent more time, would you have liked to have spent more time with your father?
I think I would have, but you know, just trying to think how. I think I would have. Yeah.
Okay, so why didn't you say? And this is not a criticism. I'm genuinely curious, right? Why wouldn't you say, Mom, Dad? You know, I'm only seeing Dad once every weekend, once a week on the weekends, and now it's gone down to once every two weekends. This not. Once every second weekend, I'm not happy with that. I want to fix that. What willpower could you inflict, or not inflict like a punishment or like an aggressive thing, but what traction did your willpower have with your parents? What did you get to say that you could, quote, make them do or make them take account of?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if this fully answers your question directly, but I think around that, time, maybe I was feeling a bit more passive, like
passive around which time. You gotta pretend like I don't know your life that well, because we've got your childhood and up to 13. So when you say around this time, I don't know what you're referring to. Do you mean 13?
Yeah, I think around 13, maybe 14.
Okay, so you started to feel more passive. That's the exact opposite of most people's experience at that age, particularly boys, because I assume that's in the ballpark of when puberty hit you, right?
Yeah.
So puberty is supposed to stuff you with piss and vinegar, right? Puberty is supposed to be like, I'm going to get out there, I'm going to rip apart brick walls, I'm going to forge my way in this life, I'm going to find a girl, I'm going to go and carve my place in the universe, right? So it is supposed to vault you with energy and focus and massive doses of brain-splitting testosterone. It's supposed to drive you out into the world to make your place, right?
Yeah.
So help me understand. And this, again, it's not a criticism. I'm sure that it made perfect sense for you to become more passive, but it's kind of the opposite of what puberty is kind of for, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, what's the question?
Why do you think you became more passive? Sorry, I was not clear on the question. My apologies. To me, this is the equivalent of saying, I lost all my interest in girls when I hit puberty. Right? That would kind of be the opposite, right?
Yeah. Maybe I felt like I just didn't have much control.
No, I understand but what were you trying to control that you couldn't? I mean, when you say I became passive because I didn't feel like I had much control, that's by definition, that's just showing me two sides of the same coin and think you've given me more information, really. So what did you want to change, or what energy did you have that you couldn't achieve What change could you not achieve? Or did you feel like you couldn't achieve?
I'm really blanking on this one, to be honest.
Okay. Did you do any sports at the time?
Yeah, I did sports.
Okay. And so you were in reasonably good shape, I assume. You weren't overweight. And did you get interested in girls in your early teens?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're straight. I don't know. I'm assuming that you're straight. Gay guys usually have more pep, so to speak, right? Okay, so you got interested in girls, and did you ask girls out in your teens?
No.
Ah, okay. And why not, do you think? Did you get buried under the pornography tsunami or something like that?
I had a lot of anxiety.
Well, okay. That's teenage life as a whole is anxiety. That's part of the excitement of being a teenager. But are you saying it was like crippling to the point where you didn't feel like you could talk to girls?
Yeah, I think I had more anxiety, like in general, like certainly talking to girls, but even just, other times, I think definitely a bit more high strung, which certainly makes it harder.
Okay, so hang on. When did you remember the anxiety hitting you in general? Or was it even when you were a little kid?
To some extent, when I was a little kid, I don't know if I'd really say I was like a super anxious kid, but I've always been a bit shy. And so I think looking back, maybe I had a bit more anxiety, but I would say around 13 was when I was really, starting high school. That's when the anxiety started to really ramp up.
Okay. So my general theory is that anxiety has to, if it's not excitement, if it's like paralyzing, anxiety has to do with a lack of preparation. So, I'm sure you've had those dreams where you have some exam or some test and you're not prepared for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times anxiety has to do with just not being prepared. And would you say that when you were 13 or 14, did you feel prepared for being a teenager, or did you feel unprepared as a whole, like ready?
Yeah, definitely unprepared.
Okay. And in what way would you say you were unprepared for teenage life?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind is, with dating, parents didn't ever talk to me about that. Really? And I don't know what prepared for teenage life.
Okay, so around dating in particular, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so did your parents talk to you about girls? I mean, I think you said they didn't. I just wanted to double check on that they didn't talk to you or sit you down and said, okay, there's this girl, these feelings, and here's what you need to do. And, it's one of these rough passages in a young man's life or a boy's life. You got to go talk to girls, although it feels like you're getting whacked in the nads by the north wind on a regular basis. I mean, it's something every Rubicon, every boy has to cross. I mean, did you get any particular conversations about the upcoming dating life of a teenager?
I think when I was 13, my dad said something like, if you want to talk to me about sex, just, open to any questions if you need to ask.
Okay, that's not so. Not really, because that's not helpful,
like,
right?
He sort of. Yeah, he was quite well. He was quite passive, actually.
You mean about that, or in
instance,
general?
About that. So it's kind of the inverse. My parents are passive and sort of in terms of relationship, in terms of talking about relationships, and then maybe that's where I got it from.
I'm a little lost here. Your father was passive about talking about relationships, and that's where you got it from? Is that what you mean? I'm not sure what it refers to here. You mean passivity as a whole?
Yeah, maybe that's where my passivity.
Okay, so maybe is not helpful.
Okay, but
no, because maybe so. It means that you don't have any emotional connection. You're just kind of throwing something out there as a possibility. I mean, maybe your father was a space alien masquerading as a human being. I mean, I don't mean to be over it, but maybe is like, it means that you don't have any memory of it. You don't have an emotional connection to it. It's just a theoretical possibility, of which there could be a million, right?
Right. Yeah. I need some more certainty. Yeah.
Well, or, I mean, you know, like, if there's an emotional connection, like, oh, that kind of resonates or something like that, that's more of a possibility. But if it's like, maybe, you know, if you've been to 10 places and you lost your wallet and I said, well, it was at this place, maybe. It's like, okay, but when did you have it? You know what I mean? Like, you need a bit more specificity.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so why do you think your parents didn't talk to you about dating? Well, let me ask a broader question. Did your parents talk to you? You said that they've given you a little bit of advice here and there, but it hasn't been particularly helpful. Did your parents, were they invested in helping you understand the world and society and dating and school and your future and career? Like, how much did they invest in you in terms of helping you understand the future?
I can actually answer the previous question. So I asked my dad about this because I wondered, why did he not tell me? Why did he not give me more advice? And he's of the opinion that he didn't want to give unsolicited advice, and that it's like he would feel like it's imposing, like he's sort of he'd be happy to answer any questions, but he wouldn't want to come and start that conversation because, like, for him, he wouldn't go to his parents about that. Like, he would, so he's kind of adopted the same view that you don't sort of, I guess, yeah, as a parent, he wouldn't want to impose it on me. Like, he'd,
what?
Yeah. He's kind of
okay. Hang on.
That way.
I don't know what the fuck any of that means. Sorry. Okay. Did his parents stay together?
Yeah.
Oh, so he's willing to do things differently from his parents, because his parents stayed together and he divorced his wife. So bringing up his parents doesn't make any sense to me at all. If he's willing to do things foundationally different from his parents, then saying, "Well, I'm doing this because my parents," I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And we could talk about a million things about all to do with that. But okay, so, and obviously he had disagreements with his parents about various things, as all people do, right? So he can't say it's because of my parents, because he had disagreements with them and he made major life decisions completely different from his parents. They stayed together, he got divorced, so it's not about his parents. And the idea that parents aren't supposed to give advice to their children is incomprehensible to me. I mean, imagine if you hire me, give me a sport that you played.
Soccer.
Okay. So let's say I'm an expert soccer player and you hire me to teach you how to be a great soccer player. And I come out to the soccer pitch and I sit there on my phone and I don't talk to you. Right?
Yeah.
What would you say to me?
Do your job.
Yeah. And I say, no, listen, man, I don't want to impose. What would you say?
Well, why did I even hire you? Like, you're here to help me.
Hey, man, you know, if you've got questions, I'm happy to answer.
Yeah.
Does that work?
No, obviously not.
No.
To be clear, like, when my dad told me that, like, I didn't accept, like, his answer is a good one. Like, that's not, yeah, I thought exactly what you thought, like, yeah, he has to be a lot more active with that. So
okay, so hang on. So you said your mother was kind of passive, right?
Yeah.
Okay, or down, not enthusiastic, right? Okay, sorry. Let's be more clear on that. So your mother was not particularly enthusiastic. Was she passive or active in life?
I mean, she does. I don't know if this is an annoying answer, but yeah, she does. A lot of sports, and she's into that, and so she is quite active in that sense and enthusiastic about that. But outside of that, I would say, yeah, she is more passive.
Everyone who gets divorced is passive. I mean, that's by definition. I will die on that hill. Everyone who gets divorced is passive. Do you know why?
No.
Because Everyone can see a divorce coming a mile off. You don't just wake up in a happy marriage one day and say, I'm going to divorce you. I woke up on the wrong side of bed. I didn't sleep well. It's all over, right? Divorces are the result of years of problems, all going unaddressed.
Yeah, makes sense.
Everyone who becomes fat as an adult is passive because you can see the weight gain. You know you can't fit into your pants anymore, right? You know your knees hurt. You know your back hurts. You know you're huffing and puffing up the stairs. You know you're overeating, right? So everybody who gets fat is passive, and everyone who gets divorced is passive because the problems are just accumulating over time, and nobody is doing enough to fix or solve them. It's like if you're in a decent organization, you know, with regular performance reviews and sort of detailed stuff like that, then everyone who gets fired is passive because their boss has been telling them, usually for months or maybe longer, that they're not performing, that they're in danger of getting fired. So yeah, the fact that your parents got divorced means that they're passive, at least over that time period. Okay, so your father is passive in that he doesn't do his job. His job is to coach, and he doesn't do it. He says, I don't want to impose. Okay, let me ask you this. Did your father ever punish you?
Yeah.
No, he can't have, by his own logic. Do you know why?
No.
Well, because punishment is an imposition.
Right, okay.
Does that make sense?
No, spell it out to me.
Okay, give me an example of when your father punished you.
I think I didn't do my homework, and I'm trying to think of something.
It doesn't have to be a big punishment. It could be anything. Yelling at you or being angry with you or negative towards you in some way.
Blanking, to be honest. I don't know
why. Okay, well, it doesn't matter if we have particular examples. Punishment, by definition, right, is the imposition of will on another human being. So if your father sends you to bed without supper, for some reason, then he's imposing his will on you. If he spanks you, he's imposing his will on you. If he yells at you, he's imposing his will on you. If he puts you down on the stairs as a timeout, he's imposing his will on you against your will, right? Punishment has to be against will. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so your father is perfectly happy and considers it good parenting to impose his will. But then he says, well, I don't want to impose my will, right?
Yeah, that is a contradiction, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. So that's all nonsense. Yeah. So why didn't he teach you about girls?
I think he probably, might be an annoying answer, but felt a little bit uncomfortable talking about that topic. Like, I know in the past he'd, as part of school, like there was some sort of sex education, and I think like there might have been some homework or something. And I remember I was doing some of that with him, but yeah, I always remember he felt a little bit uncomfortable around that topic. So he was sort of like, he would answer questions, but I could see he was definitely uncomfortable talking about that. So I think that's part of the answer.
Sorry, I don't understand that.
Not
part
a good
of the
answer.
Answer.
Well, I mean,
part,
yeah,
did you,
think,
okay, sorry, was it uncomfortable for you to do homework?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to do your homework, right? So I don't understand the discomfort thing. I mean, he punishes you for not doing something that's uncomfortable for you. I mean, I'm sure there were times where you lied to your parents because it was uncomfortable to tell the truth, and then you get punished or have a negative judgment for lying to your parents, right? So what the hell does uncomfortableness have to do with anything?
Well, I'm not saying it's a valid reason. I'm just trying to.
No, it's a. But it's not a reason.
Get into his mind.
It's not even a bad reason. It's not a reason at all. You can't say to kids, "Well, you have to do that which is uncomfortable," but then I don't have to do that which is uncomfortable. You don't have to do that which is uncomfortable for you, even if it's useless bullshit homework. But I don't have to do things which are uncomfortable to me, even if it's essential conversations about dating and life. You have to do the unimportant, uncomfortable things, but I don't have to do any of the important uncomfortable things. Did you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not discomfort. What is it?
Is there any way to know without asking him?
Well, I don't think there's any way to know even with asking him, because I doubt you'd tell the truth.
Yes, probably not.
Well, we can judge things by their effects.
Okay.
What were the effects of your parents? I mean, did your mother ever talk to you about dating?
No.
So what was the effects of your parents not talking to you about dating?
That I didn't know what to do, I guess. And in my teenage years, I didn't attempt it. That was the result.
Okay, so the net effect was sabotage.
But isn't sabotage like something like active that you do? Like you have to do something to sabotage someone, don't you?
Why?
I don't know. I guess always.
I mean, if you're a soldier fighting at the front and I'm responsible for delivering ammo to you, and I don't deliver the ammo to you, am I sabotaging your effort? I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, true.
And of course, they noticed over your teenage years. When did you first ask a girl out? Sorry, are we still on?
Yeah, sorry, I'm just thinking.
Just roughly. It doesn't have to be exact.
I think when I was like 23, actually.
Holy shit, balls, man. Are you kidding me? I'm not saying this in negative towards you at all. Your parents let you cruise along for a fucking decade without confronting you about this deficiency?
Yes.
What the fudge? How is this? Help me understand this. What?
I don't know. I'm kind of interested. When you said the sabotage thing, though, like, is there a way to know why they would do that? Or, like, I don't know what to do with that.
What does the why matter? I'm just out of curiosity.
Well, yeah, maybe it doesn't. But let's say, if I become a parent, then, you know, I don't want to do that. So understanding why a bad thing happens is good to help you to stop making that same mistake.
Well, not if it's not your mistake. So did your parents, did they talk to you at all in your teenage years about the fact that you weren't dating? Or even asking girls out? I mean, it's incomprehensible to me. Completely incomprehensible. This is an essential life skill. And the reason I say it's sabotage is that it's really dicey if you don't ask girls out in your teens. It's really tough to get comfortable with it later. And then, of course, when you get comfortable with it later, a lot of the good girls are already taken. Has your mother dated much since you were 8?
Not that I know of. Maybe she has. I think I saw that she was on a dating site, I think. But I haven't met anyone.
Sorry, when?
Any boyfriends or anything. When, did you say? Maybe when I was, I don't know, 16, 17, something like that. I think I saw the dating site in the internet history.
Okay.
Yeah, I never met anyone. Like, she never brought like a boyfriend home, or like, I don't know if like, anything about that. She's never talked to me about.
Your mother has not dated, to your knowledge, in like a quarter century.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, she's in good shape. She plays sports. She's healthy, I assume. Why hasn't she dated?
I don't know. I don't talk to her about that, so I don't know.
Why do you think?
Well, I think it's probably quite difficult to find someone when you're, thinking sort of about the time of the separation. You know, it takes some time to get over it, obviously. And then, you know, being in your early 40s with 3 kids, you're not going to find top quality guy, most likely. And
I didn't say top quality guys. I mean, but you can date.
Yeah.
I mean, my mother dated.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked to her about it.
Why do you think?
Why have I not talked to her about it, or why?
Why do you think she hasn't dated?
Maybe, yeah, I guess I would think that maybe she doesn't trust men, maybe. Maybe that could be part of it.
Well, hang on. Would that be because she thinks that all men are untrustworthy, or is that because she doesn't trust her own judgment with men?
I don't know if she'd be self-aware enough about that, but yeah, maybe maybe her self-judgment, not consciously, but subconsciously, maybe she's thinking because I remember around the time that my parents divorced, I remember hearing my mum on the phone to, I don't know, a friend or I don't know. And she was saying, like, you know, I thought things were going fine. I thought things were going really well. And then, you know, and then this happens or something to that effect.
Oh, you mean she thought the relationship was going well, but
yeah.
She was blindsided by your dad.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you believe her?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I was
blindsided so she had,
by it.
Well, yeah, but you're a kid, right? Kid. So she had no idea that your father was unhappy.
Yeah.
Come on. Oh, come on. That can't be true.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem very plausible, does it?
Well, it's not plausible. How can you live with someone, go to bed with them every night, have child after child with them, make love with them, whatever, and co-parent with them, and have zero idea that they're unhappy?
So do you think she would just say that because it would get her off the hook or something? Like if she's blindsided by it, like it's removing her responsibility, or is it?
Well, she gets to be a victim, right? No responsibility.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to say. But yeah, that's.
Well, it means that your mother, at least in this instance, is almost certainly a liar. She makes up things that are convenient to her own vanity and ego. Because, I mean, what is she going to say? Is she going to say, oh yeah, I noticed my husband was unhappy for months or years, and I did nothing about it. I just ignored it. I mean, then she doesn't get to be a victim, right? Right? So, do you know the most common reason why single mothers don't date? Because they're getting their emotional sustenance and needs met by their children or child, usually the eldest son.
It's not really, I mean, obviously it's not really the same. So how would that be a good substitute? There are single moms that date. So what would differentiate? Why? I guess this is something I can't know because I'd have to ask her and she probably wouldn't want to talk about it and wouldn't give me a straight answer. But yeah.
Well, sorry, but let me ask you something. I mean, what was your relationship like with your mother when you were a child?
I thought it was reasonably good pre-divorce. After that, it was, we were quite, I would say we'd get more and more distant and could be, certainly a bit of conflict.
And sorry, what was the conflict about?
It could have been I remember sometimes when they were talking to me about studying for exams and, I wasn't very motivated to do it. So sort of trying to get me to do that was a source of conflict for a while. Doing chores, certain chores that I hated doing. So I had arguments with my sisters, like, she would usually take their side. I thought she was a bias towards them. Yes.
And where do you think your mother was getting her emotional sustenance from, her connection, her closeness or something like that?
No, she was getting it, really. I mean, she's his friends, of course, but don't know if that would be enough. Yeah, maybe she just wasn't getting that.
Oh, so she wasn't close with your sisters either?
I think she was close with one of my sisters when she was, when she was quite young. And then, not the other sister. So, there's some connection there, but I guess maybe I didn't know quite what you're asking. Like, it's not like that's going to replace a romantic relationship, obviously. So I guess maybe I'm not too sure what you're asking.
Well, women in particular, but human beings as a whole, we're social animals, so we need that connection. We need connection with other people. We need some sort of closeness or some reasonable facsimile of closeness and connection as a whole. Would you say that's true?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, for women who can't sustain an adult romantic relationship, but they have children, usually what they do is they turn to their children as their primary source of connection or closeness or identity and so on, right?
Okay.
Now, when women...
look?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like, what does that look like?
Well, it looks like exactly what happened to you, which is crippling them from leaving the nest.
But we're not close. So how is that helping her, with connection? Because I don't think we're well connected.
Okay. What is your relationship like with your mother at the moment?
She'll talk to me about how the job search is going and...
Sorry, she'll talk to you about... Sorry, she'll talk to you? I mean, you mean she'll ask you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
she'll send me jobs.
I thought she was looking for work as well. That would be an odd coincidence, but okay, go ahead.
No, no. Yeah, she'll send me jobs that she thinks I could apply for and, I don't know, just reasonably surface-level conversation.
And how often do you guys talk or communicate?
Well, at the moment, I'm living at her place for the past...
Well, there you go.
...month and a half.
Right, so you're back.
But we don't talk, long conversations very often. But yeah, I am back.
And when was the last time your mother lived alone?
She hasn't since, I don't know. Yeah, there hasn't been a period where she's lived completely alone.
Well, aren't her children supposed to go get married?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And what's happened?
One of my sisters has left, and the other one's lived here the whole time.
Why are you giving me all of this? Why are you giving me all of this incomprehension? What do you mean my mother's crippling her kids? And what do you mean she's getting her primarily? She's keeping her kids.
But what is she getting out of it? Because I don't think that...
It doesn't matter.
There's connection.
No, it doesn't. She's not alone. She's got people in the house. She's not alone.
So even that, with limited connection, you think that's enough? She would want that more than...
Well, let me ask you this. Would you want limited food options or no food at all? There you go. Okay. How many of you guys are married and independent and having children?
None of us.
Well, there you go, man.
My sister has a long-term boyfriend.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
it doesn't really count. What counts is the ring. What counts is the independence. Okay, so you're in your 30s. Your sisters are in their, late 20s?
One's 30, one's 26.
Okay, so they should be married and they should be independent.
Yeah.
But they're not. Is the 26-year-old is still living with your mom?
No, she's
the one who's
living with her boyfriend.
Okay, the 30-year-old is living with your mom.
Yeah.
So, your parents have been failures.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah. It's...
Okay. So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about sabotage. Your father did not talk to you about dating because you and your sisters are destined to keep your mother company until she's dead. And this is why your mother doesn't need to date. And this is why you've been sabotaged with regards to dating, most likely.
But so I kind of get your hypothesis on my mom, but then why would my dad not, like, he's not having us for, you know, trying to keep us around in the same way. Like, so how would he benefit from not talking to us about dating?
Well, because he wants to keep his ex-wife happy. Again, unconscious, I assume, I hope, anyway. And also, your father, okay, you know how this goes. Give me your favorite female name.
Kate.
I'm sorry?
Kate.
Kate, okay. So let's say tomorrow you meet Kate, and Kate is wise and smart and practical and philosophical. She listens to this show, God love her. And she then meets your family, and she's honest and direct. She's like Lydia in Just Poor. What does Kate think about your family and its structure and its dynamics?
That, well, yeah, it's not very healthy.
Right, right. And what would she think if she finds out, or when she finds out, maybe she listens to this show, I don't know, but what would Kate think when she finds out that your father never talked to you about dating and you didn't date for the 10 years from 13 to 23. You didn't even ask a girl out. And your father did fuck all about it. What would Kate think about that?
Well, yeah. She'd sort of, maybe she'd think, like, certainly not a healthy relationship with, you know.
Would Kate want your parents to have a very strong influence over her own children, given what they've done with their children?
Probably not.
Well, no. Well, no. Yeah. No, yeah, I tell you, no. Unless they went to therapy or, you know, figured out what messed up things they were doing. Kate would not want, I mean, we just said to some degree that your parents were failures, and would she want people who'd failed at raising children to have a strong influence over her own children as grandparents? Well, no. That would be like, well, as an entrepreneur, you have created 5 businesses, but I'm going to make you a managing partner in my new business. That would be crazy, right?
Yeah, crazy.
Okay. So this is another reason why you can't date, because every time you go and date, and certainly if you were out there being assertive and asking girls out, you might trip over a Kate, and a Kate would march in, and she would look at your family dynamics and say, bro, this is messed up. And do your parents want that?
One time... I think it's, well, no, they don't want that, but I remember one time I had a girlfriend I was talking to on the phone, and then my mom knocked on the door and came in and overheard me, you know, saying something to her, and sort of said, like, what, something like, why are you so cold with your mom, or something like that. And yeah, shortly after that, we broke up.
Sorry, so, your mother came in while you were talking to a girlfriend and said to you, why are you so cold to your mom?
Yeah, like the way that I talked to her.
Sorry, this is a confusing story. So she came in while you were talking on the phone with your girlfriend, and you were you paused the conversation with your girlfriend and talked to your mother?
Yeah.
And then you were talking in a cold fashion towards your mother?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense, right? Because if your mother is interfering with your dating prospects, you kind of have to be cold towards her, otherwise you're not going to get a girlfriend. And what is the status of your love life at the moment?
Just single, not thinking about that right now because I'm just trying to get a job, but yeah.
Okay, when was the last time you had a long-term relationship?
2 years ago.
How long did that last?
I think it was 5 months or something like that. Yeah.
Okay, that's not very long term. What's the longest term relationship you've had?
That one's. That was 5 months.
Oh, 5 months. And how many girlfriends have you had?
Only one.
So you've had, and I mean, have you become obese or some other negative indicator?
No. Yeah, I've joined the gym.
Okay. So why have you only had one girlfriend for 5 months, the age of 32? Does that trouble you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have... Yeah, go on dates and stuff, but usually doesn't go very far. And
why not?
Because they, I guess they're not interested. They don't want to proceed usually.
Okay, for God's sakes, man, stop making me do all the work. For God's sakes, man, don't be rubber bones with me. Why don't things work out with the girls? Well, I suppose they're not interested. Yes, I know. Why?
Well, I'm sure part of it's because, I don't have the energy and the enthusiasm. Like, I'm sure that would, be a lot more attractive if I
had
that sort of confidence and zest for life.
Sorry, I've got another 20 minutes. So I just want to make sure we get to the end. So why are you not enthusiastic? What's the price of enthusiasm for you? What's the problem with enthusiasm? Because that's the state of mind that we're born with. Babies are enthusiastic. Toddlers are enthusiastic. That's our natural state. They love things. They're excited by them. They think they're the coolest. So what's the problem with enthusiasm for you? Why do you dislike it? Or why do you not express it? Or why do you think it's not something that you put out into the world or get from the world? I mean, I assume that you would rather be enthusiastic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It would make your life a lot better, right?
Yeah, I guess my first thought is that, certainly doing it a lot less than I used to, but I would, try and dampen my emotions so that I maybe felt like I was more in control and I would lessen the negative emotions because, it's difficult if you're sort of feeling negative emotions strongly and
I'm sorry,
it has
why
the side
is it,
effect
sorry,
of affecting
sorry, sorry
the,
to interrupt.
The positive
sorry,
emotions.
Sorry to interrupt. Why is it difficult for you to experience negative emotions? I mean, it's difficult to feel pain, like physical pain, but we need to be able to feel physical pain, right? I mean, if we're getting a sunburn on our back, we want our back to hurt so that we get out of the sun. If we stub our toe, we want our toe to hurt so we remember not to stub our toe, right? Every now and then, I think most of us will chomp on the inside of our cheek or lip or something like that because we're eating carelessly and we want that to hurt so that we remember to eat more carefully. You know, if our teeth hurt, it's because we need to get to a dentist. I mean, so I get that it's uncomfortable. That's sort of the point, right? Negative emotions are there to tell us that something bad is happening. And if you had a toothache, would you just take a bunch of painkillers or would you go to a dentist?
Go to a dentist.
Okay, so saying that you suppress negative emotions because they're negative doesn't answer the question because what's the problem with negative emotions? They're there to help you, right? I mean, they didn't just evolve out of nowhere.
I get that. I think like maybe I'm feeling it stronger than other people.
I can't have you waste time. You don't know that. There's no way to know that exactly how strong other people's emotions are. So just help me understand what is the problem with negative emotions. Because I'll tell you this, I mean, in this sort of hour and a half or hour 40 that we've been talking, how much emotional variability do you think you've shown?
Probably not that much.
Almost none.
Obviously,
we could be discussing your shopping list as far as your emotions go.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Verbally, yes, but the camera's off. Like, I've shed a few tears so far. Maybe that's not...
I'm just saying what voice, I experience. But. I obviously, as you say, I can't see you, so that's fine. But, okay, so help me understand why you would want to suppress negative emotions when you wouldn't do the same thing with physical pain.
People would asked what's wrong.
Okay, why is that bad? Oh no, people would show concern.
Yeah. I mean, the way it feels, which probably isn't really the answer you're looking for, is I would feel
No. Don't stronger. Don't stop pulling passive aggression with me, bro. Don't even try. I'm not looking for an answer. I'm just trying to get to the truth. Because if you say that's probably not the answer you're looking for, you're saying that I have some agenda that's overriding curiosity and the truth, which is a bit of an insult, would you say? And it's interesting that when I start talking about negative emotions, you get passive aggressive. That's a defensiveness, right? It's trying to throw me off the scent, right? Let me ask it a different way. If you have negative emotions like fear or anger, who does it inconvenience the most in your life?
Well, I guess anger is going to be my parents.
Right. So I would assume that the reason you suppress your negative emotions is that that's probably the price of staying in proximity to your parents. In other words, they would rather you not experience those negative emotions because it might make you critical of them.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah.
So how long have you listened to What I Do again?
2012.
All right. So I'm sure you've heard me talk about the necessity of emotions and the importance and health of emotions.
Yeah.
But you don't believe me. And that's fine. I mean, you're certainly welcome to not believe me. It's not like I'm sort of oracle who can never get things wrong. But you don't believe that it's true that there's value in other people's emotions. Is that right? In your own negative emotions.
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, I used to suppress my emotions a lot more. I've certainly made a lot of progress, but it's hard to change. I accept your reasoning on that. Makes sense.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were still suppressing negative emotions. Sorry if I misunderstood.
Well, I probably am somewhat, but
well, probably is another one of these maybe statements that doesn't usually lead anywhere.
Okay. I am doing it. But a lot less than I used to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. All right. Now, in the time that we have left, what is the most important thing that I could do to help?
Probably going to annoy you, but I don't know. How can you help me? So, I have talked to my dad, about him not giving me much advice or guidance. And he gave me some bullshit answers, basically. And I guess I don't know, what to do next, basically. I still have my half-brother and sister that I still want to see, but I don't know if I should still see my dad when he's completely unapologetic and just, gives me bullshit answers when I confront him on stuff.
And what about your mom?
I haven't talked to her about this because I think I know the answer already.
Well, and maybe you're dependent on her at the moment, right?
Yeah. But I wasn't last year, and that's when I asked my dad. So I guess I still avoided doing it because I don't think she's going to give me the full
do your parents,
truth.
Sorry to interrupt, do your parents have any humility or sense of not doing too well as parents, given that none of their kids are independent and married?
I don't see any sign of that.
Okay.
Of them feeling that.
Okay. Got it. Right. Well, I mean, the price of not having honesty in your relationships is not having honest relationships. That's the deal.
Anywhere?
Well, yeah, anywhere. Because if you have dishonest relationships or relationships where honesty is not possible, you can't have honest people in your life. Because what's the first thing that honest people are going to say to you?
The first thing they're going to say to me? I don't know.
Sure you do. We've just been talking about it for an hour and 49 minutes. I mean, I'm a pretty honest person. I like to be pretty blunt with people and do what I can to help. So if you have a lack of honesty in your familial relationships, then when honest people come into your life, the first thing they're going to say is, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of honesty in your relationship with your parents, which is why your parents don't encourage you to date. And I assume that your sister who's got the boyfriend, that the boyfriend is not exactly pointing this out in the family, so he's allowed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you did right.
So you're halfway to truth, right? So you've got just enough philosophy that you want the truth, but not enough philosophy that you demand it or expect it or have it as an objective standard. And so you're stuck in no man's land, right?
Yeah, certainly feel like no man's land,
or no woman's land. More appropriate. Sorry, go ahead.
I haven't taken the blue pill, but I'm not fully out of the matrix, so to speak.
Fully? You've been listening to me for 14 years. You've had one conversation with one parent. And that's not a criticism. It's just a fact, right?
Well, I also asked my dad about why he got divorced and why he got married. And that was a result of the show, because he certainly didn't bring it up.
Okay. So you've had two conversations with one parent.
Yeah.
Neither of which were particularly satisfying for you, if I understand it correctly.
I don't know what said it. I mean, it is revealing, it's satisfying if he was, I don't know. I think I got the truth, or some of the truth about the divorce, which was useful. In terms of the advice, I didn't know what he'd say. I suspected that he would say he'd give me some bullshit, and he did. So I guess I confirmed that. So I think it was satisfying. I guess that's a weird word to use, but it was useful to have. But I guess I just don't know exactly how to proceed.
Well, what you need to do, in my humble opinion, is stop thinking about your relationship with your parents and start thinking about your future girlfriend's relationship with your parents. What does she want? You know, at some point, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to say, not what do I think of my product, but what do other people think of my product? See, you're focused on the past. I'm trying to wrench your perspective towards the future. In other words, you need to look at your family of origin with the cold eyes of a market evaluation and say, how does this look to a quality woman? How does this all look to a moral woman? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. How does it look? If you invite a moral woman to come in and be part of your family of origin and have your family of origin be wrapped up in her life for the next 40 years, how does that look to her? Because if she's honest and direct and has a healthy, open communication family, how does she look at your family? That's what I'm trying to get you to understand.
Yeah, that could be the thing that scares her away.
Well, I need you to, and this, believe it or not, this is very, and I think you're right, but believe it or not, this is very much related to you looking for work. How do you appear to a potential employer, given your vocal habits and mannerisms, given your lack of passion?
Not very proactive.
You don't look like you're going to be much fun to work with.
Right.
I mean, it's a tough job market, and I'm trying to give you the advantage. The advantage is I'm desperate to work for you. I'm thrilled by this field. I read as much as I can on it. I am really excited by these opportunities. I've been studying LLM. I've been leveraging it here and there. Like, just have some enthusiasm, because there's only one dial for emotions. You can't just say, well, I'm dialing down the anger and I'm dialing down the fear, but I'm going to keep all the rest. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
it's like going under anesthetic and saying, well, I want to keep my left eye awake. It's like, nope. Right, so I want you to get a job. I want you to get a good girlfriend. And the price of that is you've got to unleash your passions. And when you unleash your passions, you don't just get the fun ones. You get the ones that aren't fun, but are in fact very helpful, if that makes sense.
So because I'm scared of releasing my anger and feeling my anger.
Nope.
That
sorry
holds
to be annoying.
Me back
sorry, no,
from...
you're not. I got to be efficient here. You're not scared of it. It's inconvenient to your parents. It's essential for you. It's inconvenient to your parents if you get angry. And they don't want you to be angry because they don't want the inconvenience.
Yeah.
It's easier if you don't have emotions and just do what they want. So your emotions are not negative towards you. Your emotions are negative towards other people's interests. And their interests come at your expense. Because to please your parents, you stay away from your emotions. And by staying away from your emotions, you cannot get or keep a quality female. Because a quality female wants your passion, your excitement. You can't pair bond in the absence of emotion, right? And you can't love a woman if you're not willing to experience all of your feelings. And a woman is only going to gain security from you if she knows how passionate you are about her, which means you have to be passionate as a whole. And if you play your cards close to your chest and you don't show feelings, you're telling a woman, you can come, you can go, I'm not going to get invested. And then they don't stick around. Why would they? Because they're going to try and have kids with you and you won't even show any particular passions or attachments or love or excitement or anything like that?
Yeah, that's quite a good point. Like, so anyone, people don't want to invest in me, an employer wouldn't want to invest in me because, I'm not excited enough.
Well, you can't commit to any job. You can't commit to any career. You could, you do stuff, you don't do stuff, you like it, you don't like it. And this is a result of a lack of passion. This is why you're drifting all over the place. You got to unleash your passions. I mean, I've had passion for philosophy for 44 years or whatever, right? And I'm not trying to hold myself out as some sort of perfect person, but I've really tried to be passionately attached. And because I'm passionately attached, I can consistently work on philosophy despite all of the opposition, and I can consistently stay married to a wonderful woman coming up for a quarter century because I try to allow all of my emotions. I welcome them. I thank them. Good, bad, indifferent. I'm down for it all. But if you keep everything suppressed, then women can't connect with you and they can't trust you, not because you're innately untrustworthy, but because we trust people's integrity, which fundamentally comes down to their passion for truth and integrity, right? And if you don't have any particular passion that you're letting loose on the world, then you're not going to have any particular passion for truth or integrity, and therefore you're going to be a tough person to pair bond with.
Yeah, that's, starting to click how it all fits together. And
there's nothing wrong with getting angry with people in your life. And there's nothing wrong with other people getting angry with you. Anger is a form of trust in a relationship. It says, our relationship is strong enough for me to get mad at you.
So if the other person doesn't, they have a problem with their anger, then that's on them. Like, there is a good way to be angry,
anger just says you care.
Way.
Yeah, all anger says is you care and something's really important to you and something's going wrong. That's very important, right? Pain is the body's way of saying I'm angry about. So I'm angry that you put my hand in the fire, right? That's what pain is all about.
This is, it's...
And it's the same thing with employers. Employers, like an employer really cares about his business, particularly if it's a boss or, they became the boss because they really care. And if you don't appear to care, if you don't appear to have access to that kind of passion, be like whatever your favorite thing is in the world and you show it to a friend and they're like, I don't care. I mean, would you want to show it to them again? Well, no. And if you want a job and it's a tough work environment, you got to show your passion. And if you want a girlfriend to commit to you, you got to show your passions. And that's the price of not being passionate. The price of not being passionate is being crippled in the workforce and not being able to get a girlfriend. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think that's enlightening, really. Maybe I half understood some of this stuff from your show, but it's...
It's a different thing to have it kind of in your face that way, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Okay, brother, I'm afraid I have to boogie. I have another call. So I've got to go and do that thing. So I hope you'll stay in touch, and I'd be happy to chat again. And I really do appreciate the call. I think you did a great job, and I'm really sorry for all of this stuff with your family. It's not great, but it's certainly more than survivable.
Thank you so much, Steph. Yeah, I really appreciate the time, time and effort you put into it. And
you're very welcome.
Thanks for that, helpful.
Let me know how it goes. All right. All the best.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.